A Wednesday Evening Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 19, 2003, entitled God and the Moral Life. Copyright Grand Valley State University. Please note that the original recording spanned two sides of a cassette tape, so there was some missing material. I will bridge the gap.
The subject this evening is God and the moral life. And the question is, do we need God to be good? That question has been rummaging around in my mind for over a year. I don't expect that you would remember. In fact, I hope you don't. I hope you don't remember a lot of things, because otherwise I couldn't use them again. But a little over a year ago, I preached a sermon on, do we need God to be good? And it came because of one of those moments, one of those experiences. I had been down to Holland, to Hope College, to the diversity workshop, when Greg Williams, who is the, I think he's the president or the dean of the Ohio State's Law School, a man who wrote a book, Living on the Color Line. You may have read it, heard it, reference to it. Grew up white and wealthy, affluent, and the father lost everything, and there was a divorce, and he and his brother were taken by their father back to his father's home territory, which was Muncie, Indiana, where his father had grown up black. He had passed the color line, but back in Muncie, everyone knew. And the boys were not accepted by the white community because they were a part of the black community. I think their address was 601 and a half Railroad Street. And they weren't accepted by the black community because they had passed off as white boys. And Greg Williams was an outstanding student, one of those unusual individuals with great moral character and strength, taken in by a wonderful black woman who became mother and grandmother and everything else to him, got his education, hanging on a shoestring at all times, and finally excelling and succeeding in his profession. But he wrote the story. And as I came back from Holland, I was so struck by that experience and so struck by our human situation and what we do to one another. And the question just popped into my consciousness. Do we need God to be good? Do I need to read some passage of Scripture to know that that is no way to treat other human beings? Isn't it possible for us to reason together, to sit down together? I was reminded of that experience even this morning on the Today Show when Katie Couric was interviewing somebody and said her little 7-year-old girl, I guess it was, what do you tell your children in a crisis time like this? And her 7-year-old said to her, well, Mom, can't we just figure it out? The child's question, the child's wisdom. Can't we just figure it out? Can't we as human beings just figure it out? Do we need God to be good? Do we need some transcendent, some absolute moral foundation for us to live as moral human beings. That's the question. Obviously, that question has been debated down through the centuries. In a book that I've referred to recently in these midweek services, The Question of God by Armand Nicolai, and where he brings Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis into conversation, he has a chapter on the question of moral conscience. And of course, here again, Lewis and Freud are on opposite sides of the question. C.S. Lewis, who began his early life as an atheist and was converted to become a Christian, claims, yes, there is an absolute moral law. And that absolute moral law is rooted in the Creator. And apart from some absolute point of reference, we wouldn't even know how to talk about good, evil. Freud says, no. You can explain the development of conscience through the development of the human race, the human being, and really our morality is nothing else than enlightened self-interest, determined sociologically by the fact, by the exigencies of our having to live together, the reality of cohabitation on this globe. We have decided what it takes in order to make life possible, society possible. And finally, we sit down and we figure out what the code is. And then, of course, to make the code binding, we project it into the transcendent realm and make the Creator God, the author thereof, giving it, therefore, absolute authority. So morality, classically in human experience, in all the great religious traditions, morality gains its authority, its absolute nature, and its force of enforcement by attributing it to the divine lawgiver. Well, which side of the coin do you come down on in that one? But however you come down on it, that still doesn't get at what I am trying to get at tonight, and that is it because there is a Creator who has promulgated an absolute universal moral law? Is that the reason that you would feel compelled to fulfill it? Or to state it another way, are you moral because if you're not, there's hell to pay? Someone has suggested, a great old thinker of another earlier generation has suggested, that if you're operating on that basis, then you're not moral at all. Then you're obedient. Then you are putting yourself under an absolute rule, assenting to it. But if it is not that which emanates out of the core of your being, then you can't call it moral. Because the moral life is that life that is lived out of one's own center according to one's own vision and value. that which one would die for, if need be, and live for at whatever cost. The great German philosopher Immanuel Kant spoke about the moral imperative, the categorical imperative. Kant said that you can't prove God through reason or research or empirical investigation, but the fact that, well, he says, the starry heavens above and the moral law within witness to the reality, the existence of God. But Kant, probably as much as anyone, any of the thinkers of that time, was responsible for that 18th century phenomenon that we speak about as the Enlightenment. And it was the human being, the human consciousness, the human rationality coming into its own and enlightening, moving from authoritarian controls, whether it be the Bible or the church or some other authority, the emergence of the free human individual. And Kant, in his ethics, said, believing that this was rooted in this transcendent God, he was the son of a Protestant pastor, and while he never went to church, he could never quite get over it. Preacher's kids have a problem with that. But in his own statement of the moral imperative, he said we ought to act such that we would be willing to will our action to be universal. Would you want everyone to act like you act? Would you want everyone to make the choices and decisions and to behave in the manner that you do? And he went on to say that we ought to act in such a way that we treat human beings as ends in themselves and not means to an end. That was a kind of absolute. And we ought to always act sensitively such that our action will enhance the moral fabric of the community. That's really good stuff. And as I said, he was perhaps as responsible as anyone for the Enlightenment. Freud, who said this is something that we scrap together as human individuals, he said, you don't have to fear educated people. It's the uneducated masses. He said, what we need to move toward is the dictatorship of reason. Well, at the end of his life, Freud had to escape the dictatorship in his own nation, the most highly educated and cultured people in the world, when he fled the Nazi horror. I just completed for my Lenten devotion the reading of a novel, a historical novel on the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I've read his biography, I've read everything I can get my hands on, but this was a novel I came across entitled Saints and Villains. And I was moved again as I read the story of this, my model and my hero. It's a tough way to read a novel when you know what happens in the last page. And when you admire and respect and love this figure about whom you're writing. And I found this time through such an identification with him in his own struggle and wrestling and that situation of the Nazi horror, where he became sensitized to the Jewish question. And he began to see about him all of these really wonderful, educated, cultured, religious people who thought of the Jew as subhuman. And as he came to that decision where he said, I have to will the downfall of my own nation in order for the life of Western civilization, and where he who had pacifist leanings had to be involved in a plot to assassinate Hitler, knowing that it would take human life. And he wrestled. He struggled. And then in those days and months that he spent in prison, and he saw human behavior, and even though he was used in a remarkable fashion, even in that context, there was a sadness and a despair that came over him. A kind of a sadness and despair that I feel tonight. A sadness and despair at the human situation. Do we need God to be moral? Well, Hitler co-opted the church. And some of the great names in philosophy. And we certainly go to war trusting God. And there was a verse in the Sunday reading from Ecclesiastes that struck me like a thunderbolt when I heard it. With wisdom comes sorrow. With knowledge comes grief. Do we need God to be moral? What difference would it make if God is or if God is not? Of course, we claim God and we go on our way anyway. More and more, I don't see God, as you know, out there, that supernatural being as the absolute lawgiver, rumbling off Sinai's heights, giving 10 commandments by which to live. Those 10 commandments, they were shared by other cultures at other times. There were other renditions of the 10 commandments before they came into Israel's possession. It doesn't matter if there are 10 commandments, there might be 8, there might be a dozen or 15. The fact that there are such that have emerged in the human story tells me that what is emerging in the human is the expression of God. That we're the finite embodiment of that infinite mystery. I believe there is an intention in this whole thing, and a directionality, and this whole cosmic process that has emerged with people like us after all these billions of years. Here we are. And why are we this way that we would talk about good and evil, or right and wrong, or the moral life? Isn't that a reflection of the fact that there has been that at the center of this whole creative process that has come now to this point? And I know the Apostle Paul thought in terms of that God out there. I'm quite sure he did.
The kind of God which I can no longer believe in. But Paul understood that God, however conceived, called for the renewing of our minds.
A kind of transformed experience. And, of course, Jesus, I know. Talking to the underdogs. I know. But we and the whole Christian tradition have said that what we believe came to expression in Jesus was the eternal Word of God, the eternal intention of God. This whole thing called the Christian tradition in all of its branches and forms is a consequence of claiming that there was a human being that was the incarnation of God, was the embodiment of God. And what that one said was that if we would reflect that God, it's a matter of mercy and compassion. And so again, does it make any difference if there's a God out there ready to hurl a thunderbolt if we don't obey? Doesn't it make more sense to see ourselves as the emanation of that God? Are we not the finite concretization of that infinite intention? And if so, then it's not a question of whether there's God or not God. It is that we are the expression of God, but that God who will come to expression only in us. Oh God, where are you tonight? Not out there somewhere watching and observing, but in here, wrestling and struggling and waiting for enough of the human family to be transformed in their mind and renewed in their spirit to dare to believe that the way of coercion and power, even for a righteous end, is only a stopgap measure that will ultimately fail unless the whole thing is put on a different basis. It's very complex. I don't feel that I'm responsible to explain Jesus or to explain Jesus away. I have to live this life of mine. In conversation with that one, in the very real situation in which I find myself. And I think it's a time of great sadness. And I wonder whether or not we will learn before it's over finally. I suppose I have to say, I will live out of my center and be and do what I can do. Bonhoeffer went to the hangman in peace. Because he has been true to his deepest insight, intuition, and faith. And that is the only way to live the moral life.